Welcome to Canucks Central at Noon. Your Vancouver Canucks live here.
Drops off for Horvat, back to Edler, then to Horvat at the slot. He scores! Bo Horvat in overtime!
On the home of hockey, Sportsnet 650.
Landeskog turned it over to Horvat, right to the slot. Pettersson scores! Is there anything this kid can't do?
Here's Scott Rintoul and Mick Nizar.
Yeah, the Minnesota Wild are in town, and yeah, Tyler Toffoli's making his debut. The Canucks players are having their dogs race tonight.
This is all that matters.
When I talked about the race for something, I wasn't talking playoffs. I was talking about the dog race tonight here at Rogers Arena as they up the entertainment value between the second and third period here tonight.
So there's five dogs racing, much like the Pack Five you've been talking
it's
about.
It's six.
Oh, is it six?
Six Canucks dogs.
Okay.
Will enter the race. They are players' dogs, apparently, and they're going to race on the ice tonight.
They should put, like, the logos for each of these teams. So, Oilers, Knights, Flames, Coyotes, Canucks, throwing a wild card team.
That'd be fun.
Let's see who's winning.
That would be a lot of fun.
Who finishes in last is not making the playoffs.
Listen, we have seen trade deadline shows in the past use monkeys, and we have seen, and it was great. It was great television, mm-hmm. Playoff picks through monkeys. Why not dogs determining who makes it in and what place they get in? It's Scott Rintoul. It's Mick Nizar. Yeah, a little more going on here tonight with Tyler Toffoli's debut, the return to the net for Jacob Markstrom. Tyler Motte is back in for the Vancouver Canucks. Zach MacEwen is out. That's the business details. But the bigger and broader conversation has been about the trade and the black hole that the Canucks, according to Jim Benning, have been in for 4 years. Been a lot of reaction to this during the course of my program today, and wanted to get your assessment of that as well. That was certainly one of the quotes that stood out yesterday, Bick, about where the Canucks have been and why Jim Benning, and I've used this quarterback analogy before, decided, okay, maybe it's not the right read right now in my progression, but I'm going to give my team a chance. Sometimes you got to take a shot, and sometimes you got to take a shot with your guy. He sees enough right now in this team, with the feel around it, the way they've battled to get to 69 points, that he feels this team and this fan base, quite frankly, deserves a shot.
Yes. And look, I think it's tough, I get it, to live in that world of, hey, look, they're burning up future assets to try to do something in the short term. But there is value in what happens in that short term. We've talked about it. Like, making the playoffs is the standard for this year. There's a bigger standard of eventually winning a cup, but you can't conflate long-term projections to short-term needs right now. And short-term, they need to start making the playoffs. Much in the same way fans talk about, hey, if you have more prospects and more draft picks, that's more chances for you to get, you know, star players. Well, giving yourself more chances to win the Stanley Cup also helps to win the Stanley Cup. And I've stressed this time and time and time again. Elias Pettersson is a superstar in this league. You get 11 good years with him. Like, in his prime, you get 11 years. If you just say, oh, we have till 2030, that's fine. But shrink that number down and say 11. 11 good years. This is year one of that. And if you just keep burning and waiting, oh, we'll get it right. If you shrink your window, you shrink your window of getting it right. So give yourself as many opportunities to get into the playoffs, and then you can eventually win your cup. Whether it's year one, year four, year seven, year nine, whatever it is, you give yourself more chances. Don't shrink your own window out of fear of eventually we'll get there. Eventually starts now.
When we can talk about the window conversation, I think it's a really interesting one, and our views on windows should probably be changing in a couple of regards, both on how long they stay open and how difficult it is to keep a window open, and that we underestimate how difficult that is to do. Some texts are coming in. I want to get to them, and I want you in on the conversation. Subway text line 650-650. Here's a good comparison. According to Mackenzie, who texts this in, you don't date a woman unless you know you're going to marry her. If you're not going to marry her, what's the point, dude? You date her because you need to learn how to be in a relationship before you can learn to be in a married one. Now, I know that can go sideways with some of the texts we are going to get, but I understand his point. You just don't know. And at some point, you got to take a chance of being in a relationship, and you got to risk a little bit of something give a little bit of something of yourself up to see if it's going to work. And it might not work, but have you grown as a person? Have you grown as a better partner for somebody in the future is the analogy he's trying to make. And that's part of what we're talking about with the Canucks this year. Will this allow them to grow, to evolve as an organization and as a team? And if they get to the playoffs, and who knows what happens there? That's not saying they're going on this unprecedented cup run. But if they get there and they are in a six-game, tooth-and-nail battle with whichever team in the first round, that can be part of your evolution. Win a round, that can be part of your evolution. What it does to those young players who are going to comprise the nucleus of this team for the foreseeable future, that is part of your evolution.
What's strange, too, is the conversation, and I see it coming into our text inbox, online and whatnot. It's the fear of moving forward, right? But people are demanding certainty off of something that we can't answer right now. Like, just to what you're talking about, of them being in the playoffs, and what if they go on a run, right? And look, I'll disagree with you, because we just don't know that. And all the people that are suggesting, hey, why even go to the playoffs? They're not built to win the cup. You don't know. Much in the same way, you don't know if they're going to go to a cup, right?
No, but my point is that's not what it has to be for this to be evolution.
Absolutely, right? It's people are demanding certainty in with what we're talking about is probabilities. Having Tyler Toffoli increases your probability of going to the playoffs. Having Tyler Toffoli increases your probability of potentially winning a game and a round and so forth. But we don't know that yet. And so stop demanding answers on February 19th for what is going to happen mid-April.
As much as people can talk about prices being high at this deadline, and we can talk about Tyler Madden and what he's going to turn into, look, this is a prospect the Canucks were high on. Mm-hmm. They really liked him. He wasn't at the top of their prospect food chain, but he wasn't at the bottom of it either. And if Tyler Madden was still in this organization, Jim Benning would be talking about 8 prospects that he sees playing in the NHL in the next couple of years, not 7.
Mm-hmm.
You disagree with that?
No.
I think he saw them in that. He's one of that cluster.
I think people
he's part of that
took
cluster.
That comment the wrong way as now that Tyler Madden was no longer in the organization, yeah, there's only 7 that he sees. If Tyler Madden was in the organization, there's 8. So he says 7 because Tyler Madden is not part of the team anymore.
Yeah.
I don't think it was structured in a way where Tyler Madden was clearly 8.
No.
And it's like, oh, we don't need this guy anymore.
Not at all.
It was not.
In fact, I asked him directly yesterday where he ranked, and Jim Benning wouldn't tell me. I'm not surprised by that. But I asked him directly, hey, where did you have him in your prospect rankings? And talked about how much they liked him, but he was fairly vague and all that. But look, we can talk about what your impressions of Madden are, what you think he might turn into, what a second-round pick is worth, whether prices are too high. You and I both know this. The deal yesterday has everything to do, or on Monday, I should say, has everything to do with your impression of the general manager as opposed to the actual price that was paid and where
yes.
this team was at.
And we've talked
that
about that.
Everything to do with. There are some people who go, hey, this team, this year, this makes sense. There are other people who go, I don't think Jim Benning makes good trades, so this is obviously not a good trade.
And we've talked about that on the idea of the fatigue of a regime, right? There is some fatigue from the fan base that says Jim Benning got an opportunity to try to take this team to the playoffs when he first arrived. Short term, worked. Long term, you're still seeing ramifications of that. Does he deserve a second opportunity? Look, we can't change that reality. He got a second opportunity. So you really have to treat the regimes as two different versions. The first era version, which failed of them trying to make the playoffs, and the second version of them trying to rebuild this, and a term that they didn't use for a long time, and eventually this was meant to rebuild. Well, you're in that stage now. And so if you want to grade the first part, that's an F. They failed miserably. The back end of this looks much better, but because it's been such a span of time and because there's scar tissue over that, people are always going to revert back to, well, what happened in 2016 and 2017 and not look at the reality of what it is today.
I'll give you an example. Kevin Cheveldayoff made a move yesterday. If you'd simply switch the names, like if Kevin Cheveldayoff was the general manager here and made that deal, would people's perception of it be different? I believe it would. Not everybody. I think there are some people who just look at this year and they look at this team the way Jim Benning did and they said, okay, that makes sense to me. And I think there are other people, because they have been down on the management group for a very long time, it colors their view of everything that's done, and they assume that something negative has been done because there have been negative moves in the past. They can't look at those moves independently. Kevin Cheveldayoff has a very good reputation. Not every trade he's made has worked out, but people think he's a really good general manager. So he gets the benefit of the doubt. I think quite often Benning gets the opposite.
Yeah, and part of that is, you know, first impressions. There was a mandate to make it to the playoffs immediately. So there's a lot of things were done to try to accelerate that. So there's an impression that, okay, that's what Jim Benning wants to do, constant acceleration. So and a trade like yesterday doesn't help that perception, obviously, of trading Tyler Madden to try to get yourself into the playoffs now.
Well, and some of that criticism, I think, was fair in the past because this regime, in its early stages, was very unclear about what its
yes.
actual mandate was. Well, we're trying to rebuild, but we're retooling on the fly. Last summer, and this argument can be made, it might be a good one. Last summer, they gave a very clear direction of where they were going, and some would say it's the first time. I think they showed that before in terms of their prospect development, but we had a really clear barometer of how this year was going to be judged.
I think it's the first time where everyone, fan base, media, team, everyone knew what the bar was. And it was all going one direction. Now, whether everyone agreed with it, different story. And that's why we're coming back to that same conversation of people that even in the summer, when that JT Miller trade was made, people said, oh, you can't make a trade like that. You're not ready. Well, look at the return you got on JT Miller. Significantly, or the return on investment, significantly more than what you gave up for. That's the value. So now you've improved. And how are you supposed to improve if you just keep waiting till tomorrow? You have to improve in the immediate, too. It's not as much as we talk about draft and develop, and that's important. We keep waiting different parts of how to build your organization at different parts of the year. They all work together. The free agent market, the college free agent market, trades, drafting, developing, all of that works together. And different points of the year, we prioritize it and say, well, the only way to do it is draft and develop. No, you just have to get better every day. That's the only job for Jim Benning, get better every day.
Vegas Golden Knights believe they've gotten better. Just to get this in, we haven't mentioned it. Alec Martinez is on his way to the Vegas Golden Knights. 2 second-round picks going back to the Kings in return. Just in case you had not heard that news, it was a deal that many thought was basically done last night. It's now cemented. Alec Martinez has beefed up that blue line with the Vegas Golden Knights. Keep those texts coming in. I want to get into this conversation throughout the course of this hour. Christian says this: I think a lot of Vancouver Canucks fans haven't grown past the 2011 Stanley Cup final. I believe this affects the thinking regarding any decisions on trades, lineups, coaching. Just wish more people would be thankful you have a team that is now building into something great again. Maybe. Wouldn't you rather make the playoffs than watch your team go golfing in April? That is from Christian. I think it really depends where your team is at, Christian. And not that fans often cheer against their team, but there is that unique situation, Bick, where I think you talk about that fatigue and fans wanting bigger change. I think there's the odd situation where fans go, you know what, I actually want this team to fail so that it forces the organization to make bigger change. I get that text from Calgary a decent amount this year.
Right.
That they don't want the Flames to have a great deal of success because they actually don't think it's going to lead to the ultimate success. They don't think that there are certain players on that roster, and specifically the one that always gets mentioned is Johnny Gaudreau, but they don't see him as part of the evolution of the Flames doing really big things as opposed to just getting into the playoffs. So while I think Christian's point is good, I think there's the unique situation sometimes that occurs where you want your team to have a little bit of a step back. In Vancouver, I don't get that general sense from the fan base. I don't. I think most people want this. I think most people want another playoff appearance, want to figure out what this team looks like playing games when they're in the tournament in April, as opposed to, they were close, let's see what next year looks like.
And fans are smarter, right? As much as we've been complaining about the conversation over this trade, fans are smarter today than they were 30 years ago, just because they have more information, right? We have more reference points of how teams are built. We live in a cap world and all that. Fans understand a lot of those processes. But it also depends on the lifespan of where you are in your team. 5 years ago, I think a lot of people were rooting for, and it made sense for the Canucks. It's like, okay, playoffs are great, but given the lifespan of what's left, you know, you kind of need high-end talent. And I'm not suggesting tanking, because that's a different philosophy. But, you know, accruing draft talent was important 5 years ago. If you're the Minnesota Wild, the team that the Canucks are playing tonight, like it matters if you're going to the playoffs or if you're getting high-end draft talent. That's a real conversation, and they can explore either side. But where you are in the Canucks' life cycle is playoffs. That's it. You have to start getting in every year now. We make fun of Edmonton and that conversation that they're having. It's like, oh, they have to get in the playoffs. What if Connor McDavid actually demands a trade because they've missed the playoffs in so many years? What if the Canucks miss 3 years in a row with Elias Pettersson? Don't you think everyone in every other market is going to have that same conversation about Vancouver? It's the same principle. And so you have to eradicate that black hole emptiness of never playing in April. You've got to get rid of that mentality and start making the playoffs.
And make no mistake, you can stagnate at the next step in the the process as well. Enter the Toronto Maple Leafs. The Leafs are often compared to the Oilers because of the foundational pieces of McDavid and Matthews. They're not on the same level of talent, but Matthews is a great player. He's awesome. He's leading the Rocket Richard race right now. And when Austin Matthews and Mitch Marner and those young players in Toronto got their first playoff taste, that was the first step in the evolution. Well, that's stalled so far. That has been first round out, first round out, first round out. Are they going to get into the playoffs? That's where they reside right now. I think they're still good enough to be a playoff team. I don't see enough to think they're going to be a successful playoff team. And when we talk about the evolution of a team, if they don't make it past the first round this year, and sitting here in the middle of February looking at the way they play and the way they've been run by good teams, there's no reason to think they're getting past the first round right now.
It is funny, too, because we talk about how lucky the Canucks are to be in a Pacific Division. In a way, the Leafs are kind of lucky to be in the Atlantic Division. It's like you have two powerhouse teams. If they were playing the way they were in the Metro, they're not close to a playoff spot.
No, they're not.
So that the Atlantic has such good high-end teams, obviously. Tampa, Boston. But after that, like, it's you're lucky you're going to the playoffs because you get that third seed in the Atlantic.
I guess my point is this. Making the playoffs is it's part of the evolution process at a certain point. And then there needs to be another one. Mm-hmm. And I'll tell you this, in Toronto, what is the fallout if that team either doesn't get to the playoffs or they don't make it past the first round? What's the fallout there? I don't think it's the general manager, and it certainly isn't the head coach.
I'm glad you mentioned just the fallout and also, you know, getting to the playoffs and learning the lessons. What was the lesson that we thought we learned from Toronto and Boston for 2 years that the Leafs can't really defend, right? So for anyone texting in, be like, oh, what value did the Leafs gain in losing the first round 3 years in a row? We all learned the lesson. The Leafs didn't apply the lesson. So don't just equate the Canucks and the Leafs. It's like, oh, how valuable is playoffs lessons? You have to apply the lesson. The Leafs went the other way and said, hey, we're not going to defend. We're gonna find players that they value, I get it, and that are important in their eyes, but they don't have guys who can defend. So if you don't learn the lesson, and if you don't apply the lesson, okay, then you screw up. Going to the playoffs for the Canucks is important, so we can learn the lesson of what needs to improve.
Okanagan Guido sends in this text on that subject. More information doesn't change one's intelligence. It only allows for the potential of analysis to be better. Yeah. You can have all the information you want if you don't know how to handle it. And that's not to say Kyle Dubas doesn't know what he's doing, but he is at a really critical point right now.
The right details matter, right?
Yes, they do. And courage of conviction.
Yes.
So Kyle Dubas has said, this is a way I think we can win. And he's assembled all these parts based on the vision he has in his head with where the game is going, and a lot of those parts are admirable. Any organization would want them. But if those parts aren't willing to do the things that are necessary, or you don't have enough of the guys who are blue collar, lunch bucket, put on your work boots and do those things, it might not matter. And this is a really interesting week for him. I'm not saying he's making massive surgery right now, Bick, but they pushed back for a very long time on you guys can't figure out your goaltending situation. No, we're good. We're fine. Mm-hmm. And finally, they relented and said, turns out we couldn't figure out our goaltending situation. We're going to go get one. They've pushed back for a really long time in, hey, we've got the right guys and they will play the right way. Does he do something in the next 5 days?
I'm not sure how many more things they have to burn, right?
Like, I can tell you this. If he doesn't do something in the next 5 days and they either go quietly into the night in the first round or somehow miss the playoffs, that roster's getting significant surgery next year. Not all parts out, but significant piece. Mm-hmm. At least one.
And, you know, here's the strange thing. Is you talk about that and it has weight because we know the high-end pieces that are there, right? And I've said this before. I would rather have the Leafs roster for exactly what you're talking about. You can do more with it because the talent is there. If you moved out of William Nylander, you can get a nice return, and you can start building out the rest of your roster better. But if you ask me who's the better team, because those are two different things, assets and you know how the team plays together, I would rather have Vancouver Canucks because they play better as a team.
At the beginning of this year, most people seemed happy with the narrative of, quote, meaningful games in February, March. Now the team has overperformed, so obviously that's been moved up. I still think the going-in mentality should have waited until next year where we have more young players on ELC to build around with veterans and have them grow together. Benning has stocked the cupboards. We shouldn't prematurely empty them when we are not a legitimate contender. I'm sorry, we are not, but have the ability to be in 2 years. Okay, that's from Sam in Vancouver. That's fine. I don't think most people look at the Canucks as a legitimate contender. Very, very, very few would look at them like that. However, the chances of going from, we're not close to being a contender, to, hey, we're a contender in 1 year, that is extremely difficult to do. It almost never happens. There is a step along the way. And what the Canucks are betting on is that they can take one of those steps this year. And that next year, they take another one and are a lot closer. Like the perfect linear improvement model is kind of what they did in Nashville a few years ago. Went to the first round, played well, went to the second round, got ousted, then they went to the Stanley Cup final. Now it's been the exact same linear downslope on the other side, out in the second round, out in the first round. We'll see what happens this year. But that's linear progress. Colorado is undergoing that right now. First round with McKinnon dragging him in.
Right.
Second round, seven game, man, could have gone either way. And now what's the expectation? Well, that's a Western Conference final team or a Stanley Cup team. It should be in year three. Very few teams are able to have the opposite, which is, we weren't that good and we were just on the cusp. Oh, now we're up for a cup this year.
Especially when we just watched the lesson of, like, Elias Pettersson hit that rookie wall. He goes into the offseason and says, I now know what things I have to work on. So applies it to this season, and look at the fresh player we're getting now. Yes, he took a bump and a bruise against Boston, but by and large, you're getting a faster, smarter player. So go to the playoffs. Do you learn that lesson? Okay, now I know what I need to do. It's these are the steps you have to take.
Well, and here's the other part of that evaluation process. And yes, you got to get there to find out, but you can only find out if certain players are able to raise their game or to perform in a playoff environment if they're actually in a playoff environment.
Right.
That's where that more information comes in. And how much of that is, it's his first time here, now he knows he'll improve, and how much of it is, you know, we thought that guy would be better in this situation, and he doesn't have the jam to get it done when the rules change a little bit or when time and space goes away. If you're never in that environment, you're never going to know. You're going to be hoping. You're going to be crossing your fingers every time. We talk about what prospects might be in the NHL. Those are NHL players who are playoff prospects, really, until we find out.
It's like equating age to, not to make another loose analogy like the early one for, about
getting
the relationships. Married. It's like you turn 18 or 16, it's like, now you can drive. No, you have to learn how to drive. You got to learn how to do it. Yes, you've seen cars driven around, but you got to learn how to do that.
We can speculate all we want that Jake Virtanen's game is going to improve in the playoffs or that it's going to regress. Until we see him there, we have no idea. But you got to get there first. Let's keep this conversation going on. Lots of text messages coming in. 650-650, it's a Subway text line. I want to get into this conversation of windows. What we thought they were, what they really are, and how difficult it is to keep one open. That's next right here on Canucks Central, on the home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
Of Canucks Central on the official home of the Vancouver Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
It's one of those things where being in the position I was in early on in my career, and then losing that feeling, it's good to be back into it, and I just got to, you know, do what I can to help the team win and be successful here moving forward. And I think we're all excited. This is the best time to play hockey.
I assume that is Tyler Toffoli, Jamie? Just a guess. I didn't recognize the voice, which is part of the reason I figured it must be Tyler Toffoli, and obviously the context of what he is saying. He makes his debut tonight. He'll line up alongside Elias Pettersson and JT Miller, at least to start, which is the caveat we always throw on these line combinations, because if things aren't going great, Travis Green, he has a penchant for mixing them up, which I understand. You're just trying to win the game. We'll also see him on power play one. Looking forward to seeing him in that bumper role tonight.
Which is where you and I have, or me specifically, I don't want to put you in the jackpot here as well.
No, we've,
but
we've yeah. both been on the same page there.
Would love to see Brock Besser in that spot. But now, look, there's a reality that when Brock comes back, what do you do now? Because it feels like a better allocation of resources to have Brock on also on the first power play. And if Toffoli makes home in that spot, that's really interesting too.
Well, you and I both have believed that Bo Horvat was a better fit on the second unit. Mm-hmm. Because we wanted to move Besser over to the bumper spot and open that other spot up for someone else, that could still be a possibility, but it's going to be a long time.
Yeah.
That news yesterday was massive on Brock Besser, and they're optimistic that he can be back before the eight-week time frame they laid out, but that seemed to be, hey, let's hope we have him back for the playoffs. And at that point, can you get up to speed? Where are you at with your game? A lot of questions to be asked at that point in time. The window. We talk about it with every single team that gets into the playoffs and where they are in their evolution. Do we have to change what we believe the window is? Not for the Canucks, but I just mean in general, Bick. And I'll give you a couple of examples. The Leafs got in the playoffs a couple years ago. Was that the opening of their window?
Mm-hmm.
The Winnipeg Jets were said to be just opening their window, forced to be reckoned with for years to come. Are they still in their window? Or do we look at them differently? Do we make the assumption incorrectly that the first time a team either gets into the playoffs or has any type of playoff success, that it's the opening of a window and this is something that is going to be sustainable, as opposed to each year's its own individual competition?
Well, okay, what you just said there, it's all rooted on the idea of when teams were ready to have success. Of, hey, they made the playoffs, right? And that's a result, right? You've achieved so much, you're in the playoffs now. We talk so much about process over result. The process is developing a team and building the roster. That's what you should be looking about. And so when does the process start? And that's where evaluation comes in, of looking at the team and being honest of what a team is. And so when we look at a team like Winnipeg, did we talk about them having their window before the season that they made the playoffs or once they made the playoffs? And a team like Toronto, there was an expectation that, you know, after that first year with Toronto, it's okay, now you're ready to start going. And I look at this Vancouver Canucks team, like the way you evaluate them at the beginning of the season should have been, you're ready to go to the playoffs now. We've confirmed one of your players is a superstar. So now you start going to the playoffs. There's your window. This is year one of the window. And I guess what we talk about then is how much do you open the window? At what point are you just sticking your head out? Are you diving through the window? There's that process of it. And so maybe the term window just sucks. But essentially, leading up to Elias Pettersson, that was building the window. And now the window's open. It's just open. And you have to understand that as long as he's in your organization, you have a responsibility to honor the window and go for it.
And to what extent?
Yes.
That is a
Do you want to jump
year
through
by
with two
year.
Feet? Yes.
That is a year-by-year evaluation, because one of the things Pittsburgh has shown that we have underappreciated, in my opinion, is how difficult it is to keep mm-hmm. the old window open and to convince your management that, yeah, you should spend significant assets again to give us a real chance. Pittsburgh has kept that sucker propped open and deserves a chance every single year to forsake the future for the now. But there aren't very many teams that can do that. It is so hard to get in now.
Mm-hmm.
It is so hard to keep that window propped open. I think we've underappreciated how difficult it is. We make the assumption that a team takes that first step in its evolution, that it's going to be onward and upward, and they deserve that same opportunity, if not next year, the year after, and then for the foreseeable future. It's tough, man. It really is difficult. So when you do see an opening, and I think this really, it's why I wanted to use the quarterback analogy before. I think it is akin in some ways to being a general manager. You really have to know your team.
Oh, big time.
And you really have to know a feel for, in the case of a quarterback, a game. Hey, when's that moment when you can afford to take a shot? And with your team, I know what our point total looks like right now. And I'll give the Pacific Five, I'll use that as the example. They all basically have the same point total, but but each team has a real different feel to it. You got to be in tune with what you've got and how you can best utilize that.
Yeah, there's a different confidence level from Edmonton, Vegas, Vancouver, Calgary, Arizona. Like, Edmonton, probably thrilled to have 70 points at this stage of the season. Vegas, probably kind of concerned to have 70 points at this stage of the season. But they both got 70 right now. As of February 19th, they both got 70, top in the division right now, 2 points up on everyone. But, you know, Arizona 68 looks different than Vancouver 69. That's just how it is. And you got to live with the ebbs and flows of the season. And I know deadlines spur the kind of emotion because now it's, you know, the temperature rises. And that's fair. The temperature should rise. What did we talk about in November when they were in a losing streak? It's November. Lower your alarm bells a little bit for when it's time to be ready. If you redline the whole season, you never know when to go up and down. Now it's a moment to use the range of emotions. That's why we've talked with a bit more urgency. That's why there's a bit more urgency in the reporting and just in general, the demands from the players as well, because it's urgent time now.
This one comes in. You got to remember, guys, Winnipeg is different. Nobody wants to play there, and if they do, it's for a premium dollar. Hard for them to sign affordable depth and top-tier players. Want to leave. Trouba and Byfuglien, for example, high taxes, ugly city. Why would you want to stay? I think Winnipeg's window could change every year because it's hard for them to keep guys. There's a lot of assuming going on there. Yes, it is not Los Angeles. I got news for you. There's people who don't want to play in Vancouver. There's guys who just don't want to play in Canada in general. City comparison, there's not much question to me.
Yeah, but there's pressure that comes to it.
But look, they've been able to re-sign guys. There are guys that could have walked. There are guys that have stayed. They don't really have a lot of guys who've said, I'm only staying if you pay me this crazy premium. They don't have a lot of guys like that on their roster. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it can be a little more challenging, but there's lots of markets where it's challenging. I don't think Winnipeg is in isolation in that regard. I don't think it's just Winnipeg and Edmonton. Nobody wants to play there.
Now, they have led player polls as well, but
yep.
Those player polls don't speak for everyone. And
no.
You go back to, of the people that do want to be here, can you create a roster that is competitive? Yes, that reality exists, right? I understand that they're not the most desirable place, but let's not pretend there aren't players that don't want NHL paychecks.
For sure. And look, Columbus was a place that was said about for a very long time. Nobody wants to play in Columbus. Not a great organization. Well, not everybody re-signed there. Panarin left, Bobrovsky left, Duchesne left. But they were willing to be traded there. In some cases, guys have waived. And when you establish yourself as a quality organization, that can absolutely supersede just the city you live in or the surrounding trappings, if you will, of where that place happens to be. If you make yourself a desirable enough franchise. Detroit was a great example of this forever.
Mm-hmm.
Is Detroit a great city? No.
But the right players wanted to stay there. If you're Winnipeg, like Blake Wheeler wanting to stay there, that's the right player, that style of player. And again, that makes it tough, yes, because you have to find that style of player that has that mentality. But that's part of the job. Like the job, general manager's jobs should be tough. We keep trying to find ways to make it easy. And yes, that's, you know, you try to streamline things. But the job is tough. Let's have an appreciation for it at times.
Yeah, it most certainly is. It absolutely is. What's your evaluation of what you're seeing in Toronto right now? We touched on it a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Do you see this as a team that's going to miss the playoffs? Do you see it as just another first-round exit right now for the Toronto Maple Leafs?
I lean more to that. It's like they have so much skill. It's hard to picture a way that they don't make the playoffs. It's staggering how fluid they can play and create goals. But when you talk about can they defend, it's chaos. Like you watched that Pittsburgh game yesterday. we were joking on the program. It looked like a Globetrotters Washington Generals game. That the Generals like set up defense and then just stood there and watched the Globetrotters go all around them. And it was backdoor tap-in passes with empty creases and Crosby's tapping it in, Zucker's tapping it in. They had no problem. And as soon as this was my biggest fear. That, yes, they can dominate the shot clock and all of that, and they have great possessions. And this is not a referendum on analytics at all. But just the way this team was built, in that 60% when they had the puck was going to look great. And, yes, they could only give up 40% possession. But how do you defend in that 40%? And within that 40%, teams are crushing them. Crushing them.
You mentioned Jason Zucker. He scores again yesterday. He, of course, was acquired from the team the Vancouver Canucks are going to see tonight. What do you make of the Wild? Bill Guerin, he is still somewhat of a mystery. We expected the Boudreaux move either earlier or later than it happened, and then all of a sudden it was done. He trades Zucker and says, if I see quit, there will be more trades, but I'm also not committing to trading anybody. We've heard a lot of names off this roster, specifically at the top of the list, Matt Dumba, because there's a player who's coveted, and there's a player who can get you a good return, even though he's the type of player you would want to keep. What do you make of what the Wild do in the next few days?
They're in that weird, like, rudderless, kind of like where the Canucks were a few years ago, right? They have aspirations, and I think from top down, there's expectations that they are always competitive. But, like, just look at that roster. Like, Parise's 35. Good player. Ryan Suter, 35. Again, good player. You go and sign Matt Zuccarello at 32 years old to the contract he gets. I'm not sure how you fix this in the short term. We've had the conversation of which, if you had to get a first overall pick from anyone for the 2022 draft, which pick do you want? Like, Minnesota's in that conversation. Montreal's in that conversation. San Jose may be in that conversation. It seems like it's tough to turn this around, but they have enough players to get you to a baseline, and that's why it was surprising when they made that coaching change, because Bruce Boudreaux was kind of getting them to that baseline. They were competitive. They were active in that wild card chase right now.
Yeah, the stratification of their roster is really interesting because of what you mentioned. They've got all those guys age-wise at the top, money-wise at the top, and those are the exact type of things you don't want to be tethered to when you're trying to reshape your organization. As for the Vancouver Canucks tonight, what do you need to see more of this week compared to what you saw last week? And I'm lumping all the games in as a
right.
whole. Even though the results were different, I'm lumping all the games in as a whole.
I think what we talked about coming off of the Chicago game, I think, or maybe it was the Calgary game, it's like you need a foundation of what this team is. And the identity of this team is that they can score. That's where I'm kind of landing is – they want to be an offensive flair team. But much like we just talked about with Toronto, you need to, have the puck. You need to be able to defend better. And with Toffoli, who I think is an underappreciated defensive winger, he's got that one-shot potential, and that's what people look at. But I think he's better defensively than people realize. It's in the prototype of Louis Erickson, just a better version of it.
Well, and as we evaluate him tonight, people are going to look for, of course, they're going to look for a goal. They're going to look for power play success for Tyler Toffoli. I'm interested to see the puck battle.
Yes.
That's what I'm interested to see with Tyler Toffoli, because that is part of the calling card he's supposed to be bringing to Vancouver. And that's part of the reason Travis Green thinks he can fit into this system. And on that line specifically, now you got three guys who are generally very involved in winning those puck values and very committed to winning those puck values.
And also just a smart player. The other thing I've been harping on is not necessarily puck possession in terms of winning the shot clock, but puck possession, just cycle and grind out some shifts. Too often there's one and dones, right? And we're getting to the point of the season where limiting mistakes is a big thing. And if you open up your team and start playing one and done offense, where you're just trying to just create the first shot available, and now it's suddenly transitioned back the other way, limiting mistakes is, you can also just have prolonged shifts in the offensive zone. You drain out the clock, and you start trying to win that way. That's something I would like to see more of the Canucks. I think Toffoli fits that mold to some degree as well.
One of the things we've not yet addressed here on Canucks Central as we work our way toward the trade deadline, the persistent Wayne Simmonds rumors. Mm-hmm. Where are you at on that personally?
it's all relative to price, right? I'm sure you're probably land on the same spot. It's like you can acquire anyone you want. It's all relative to cost. Tyler Toffoli, I felt, okay, that's about the right cost for Toffoli. I see some texts coming in of, oh, it should have been a third, and you should have got Louis Erickson out of the deal. It's just because you want to do something doesn't mean someone else wants to take it. Trading is a two-way street. Would Jim Benning love to get rid of Louis Erickson? Sure. Is that option available to him? Sure. Are you ready to pay the cost to do that? So this was the cost of Tyler Toffoli.
Yeah, this is the time of the year where you're shopping at Whole Foods, man. Yeah. That's where you're shopping at this time of the year. You might normally shop at Save-On. You might normally shop at City Market. But at this time of the year, if you want groceries, it's Whole Foods prices.
Yes. So I'm okay with acquiring Wayne Simmonds. He's not my favorite player, but if that's the guy that ultimately gets landed on, it feels like that's the way this is trending. It's relative to the cost. If it's a sixth-round pick, it's not that big of a deal. If it's a third, that's a bigger issue. It's just relative to cost.
You wonder if Benning's actually going to be willing to give up draft picks. His indication is, no, I'm not. So if it comes down to a prospect, how comfortable are you there?
But again, like,
what's the prospect?
Which prospect are we talking about? Are we talking about the rights to Nikita Triamkin? I'm okay with that. Are we talking about, you know, Cole Lind? I'm not okay with that. It's where are you in the scale? I'm very pro trades in general. It's just, what's the cost? What element of risk are you taking? JT Miller to me was a 70-30 risk, as in, or sorry, 30-70 risk, as in they were getting pretty big reward off of it, and I would be willing to take that chance. This Tyler Toffoli trade, you know, 60-40, you're probably on the upside of, you're probably getting the bigger reward. If you move someone like Cole Lind for a short-term sprint with Wayne Simmonds, you're probably looking at like a 10-90 return on investment. That to me is a heavy, heavy risk. Where do you land? Right? Like, I feel like you're in the same spot. If they're giving up, I don't know, who's someone deep down the list?
Do
there?
I look at the Canucks right now and say, you know what, to make them a lot better, Wayne Simmonds? No, I don't look at them like that. Could I see him helping them to a certain degree? Yeah, but I'm not itching for that move. I think there's some things Wayne Simmonds can still do.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I don't think he's adding a lot of speed. I think he's adding experience. I think he's adding those puck battles. Guy who can score in tight spaces and has been there in all of those situations. No question. But I'm with you. Acquisition cost. What does that look like? And it can't be much.
If it's Petrus Palmu, are you too concerned?
Nope.
If it's Jalen Chatfield, Mitch, like, are you that concerned? No, I'm not really that concerned.
This one comes in. I think Vancouver overpaid for Toffoli a bit. The second round draft pick should have been if Toffoli re-signs. I see other teams that make deals with salary retention and whatnot. I have not seen Vancouver make a deal where they look great since Stoyanov for Naslund. Well, I've seen plenty where they have.
They've literally just traded for JT Miller. Like, that literally just happened.
The Luongo deal was fairly decent.
Yes.
That worked out okay.
I mean, that's
our buddy Aldi, we love him, but that was a pretty decent deal. That's a pretty decent deal. So we don't have to go back that far. Salary retention, you want to know why there wasn't salary retention? Because they moved Tim Schaller.
There's your salary.
That was the salary retention. Could you have asked for more? The case has been made that perhaps you could have foisted Sven Berchi upon the LA Kings, and maybe they should have pushed harder for that. We'll never know.
But here's the thing. It's like, do the Kings want Sven Berchi? And if they do, at what cost is that to you? That's what we're talking about here.
Well, of course. And hey, look, we weren't in those negotiations. Maybe that was the first play. Look, you guys aren't going to be good anywhere next year anyway, so taking on Sven Berchi, and he's a guy who can at least play on your roster, why don't you do that? And they perhaps balked at that deal and said, we got better offers. We don't have to take on that type of money. We don't have to take it on for next year. So that's not what's happening with us.
You have to break the mindset of the Canucks are the only people in the league trying to make trades. Right? It's not that. It's not as if the Kings only negotiated with the Canucks for Tyler Toffoli. This is how selling works. That at some point they came to the conclusion of, hey, we are comfortable taking on Tim Schaller. We are not comfortable taking on Sven Berchi. And oh, by the way, the 3.36 that comes with it next year. Teams aren't signing up to pay a lot of money unless there's a reward to it.
One quick topic for you before we get to the end of the show here. I found it interesting yesterday that Chris Johnson said Robin Lehner could be on the move before Monday. I did not expect that. He said potential suitors include maybe a Carolina, maybe the Oilers. He said maybe Colorado. I asked Adrian Dater about that earlier in my program. He said he didn't see that deal, but depending on the Grubauer injury, I found that interesting that Leonard could be on the move in the next few days.
Yeah, his contract status is going to be really fascinating because Chicago's going to have to choose between one of them. Much like we talk about here of Markstrom, Demko, who do you choose at some point? They have a more immediate timeline because both guys are UFAs. And Corey Crawford's legacy there, right? He's obviously had a lot of success there. And
well, they could go a completely different direction if they don't get something done with either of those guys.
Yes.
So what if they do that and say, I don't see Jacob Markstrom sign. Maybe we'll wait that process out. That could be another team that tries to get in on that conversation. You never know.
I would be surprised if they go down the Robin Lehner trade route. But, you know, like what?
Chris Johnson's speculation
it's the
was
same conversation here.
His conversation was rooted in this, that Robin Lehner, after what he went through last year, wants to be fairly compensated,
yes,
both in term and in money. And it doesn't sound like they're there yet in Chicago. And if that's going to be the case, and if they're at a point where Robin Lehner says, I'm not budging, and Chicago says, well, we're not willing to do that, do they just try to acquire something now for the asset?
Just for the short term? Yeah, but, you know, the goalie market isn't so bullish, and it feels like Colorado is the only kind of buyer in this scenario. And how hard are they willing to push? Because one of the things, you know, for their roster that they've done really well is long term. It feels like they want to minimally spend on goaltending. Grubauer signed for another year at 3.3. Is acquiring a Lehner, is that part of your long-term plan? Do you intend to re-sign him? I don't. It feels like Colorado's done a very good job of looking long-term. I would be surprised, but you know, Chicago does have to do something at some point with those two guys.
What's coming up on the program today in addition to the NorlandLimited.com pregame show?
Yeah, obviously we're going to get set for the game tonight, which should be a good one, but you know, it's just days away from the deadline, right? We want more. We want to know what's going on across the league. NHL insider Mike Zeisberger will check in with us and also talk about, you know, what's going on with those Leafs, man. It is dark times for them.
Should be a lot of fun. That's coming up 3 hours from now. In between, Reach Deep, Dan Riccio, Randeep Janda coming up next. Enjoy the game tonight, everyone, in your home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.